My name is Paul. I'm one of the pastors here, and I get to welcome you as well to a Christmas service. I want to start off by doing a little poll, a little question and answer. Would you rather be, you have two choices here, the strongest person in the world or the smartest person in the world? And why? Who's got an answer? Over here, red, the Santa hat. The smartest, because then you could what? Ooh, come up with strategies. All right. I have a strategery here. Great. All right, right here next to you. Smartest, so you could do your what? Reading. Good. That is worthwhile. Way in the back, the red shirt. Smartest, because then you could figure out how to be the strongest. Yeah. There was somebody in the first service that came up with that, too. The little trump card beats everything else. Any strongest? Anybody wants to just, yeah, right here? Strongest. Ah. I'm not sure even the strongest could do that. I mean, let's be reasonable here. Anybody else? Last one. Strongest or smartest? One hand, little hand here. Smartest. A good choice. You're in good company. Nice. Well, being strong and being smart are things that our world values a lot. And in thinking about this, I started thinking about all the things that we do in order to either be smarter or be stronger. We go to school to be smarter. We read books. We study. We take tests. We read articles online. We listen to lectures. We do a lot of things, a lot of activity in order to become smarter. To be stronger, we go to the gym and work out, or at least some of you probably do. We exercise. We do physical therapy. If we get hurt, we try to eat healthy. We want to be stronger. We want to build up our bodies. So it seems that these two things are great value to us. We want to be smart. We want to be strong. The question, though, is why? What do we hope to gain by becoming these things? And this morning, in the Christmas season, we celebrate the birth of a baby who is neither smart nor strong. The baby isn't strong enough to stand up on its own. Babies aren't smart enough to feed themselves. I've tried. It doesn't work. And yet this baby is the symbol of something that we celebrate during this season. And we make a really big deal about this particular baby. This morning, we're going to look at a story of how two different groups of people responded to this baby. First, we have a group of people who were essentially the smartest people around. The other category is an individual we're going to look at who is the strongest person around. And these two people, these two categories of people have very different responses to this baby that is born in Bethlehem. And as we look at the choices they make, those choices are going to show us options that we have. My hope is that we would learn something about true strength and true intelligence, and that we would learn something about making good choices. The story is located in Matthew 2, verses 1 to 12. And if you haven't guessed already, it's a story of a group of wise men who travel a very long way to meet this newborn king. We're going to walk our way through this story and kind of watch how it unfolds. It'll start with the smartest people around, this group of wise men. And we'll see their purposes, and we'll see them coming to do what they want to do. Then we'll switch gears and we'll look at the strong man in this story, King Herod, and how he wants to respond to this news. We'll go back to the smartest men and we'll find out what happens to them, how the story unfolds for them, and we'll wrap up with one final look at the strong man. My hope is that these two characters will give us a kind of decision options, that we can see how we might respond to the baby. And when we get to the end, we might be motivated to choose wisely. So let's start off by reading the first few verses of our story. Here's Matthew 2, verses 1 and 2. Matthew chapter 2. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." Now, Matthew doesn't tell us a whole lot about the birth of Jesus. His story is not like Luke's that goes into all this detail of the events leading up to the birth. Matthew essentially tells us that Jesus is born, and then he tells us what it means that this baby has been born. He seems more interested in the implications of Jesus' birth than the birth itself. And he uses these people initially to demonstrate the importance of this event. He calls them wise men from the east. So our first question to ask then is, well, who are these people? Who are the wise men from the east? And this question has a lot of different possibilities. People have debated various options of who these individuals were. We sang a song called We Three Kings. It's possible they were kings. That comes from a prophecy that was fulfilled. The most likely option, in my opinion, is that they were Babylonian astrologers. So they were people who studied the stars in hopes that the stars would give some information as to what happens here on Earth. Astrologers are still in practice today. At any rate, these guys are presented in the story as the smartest people around. They knew a lot. They didn't know the one true God. They were probably not Jews, but they knew just about everything else. So I know we have some kids here, and I know some of the adults have the attention span of kids, so I'm going to use some props here to help illustrate this. What animal represents wise people really well? What do you think? An owl. Good choice. All right, so I have an owl here that we're going to use to represent our wise men, all right? We're going to sit this owl right here, and the owl will remind us about our very wise men that we're thinking about. Now, we usually think people are smart because of how much they know, right? What's interesting about these wise men is they knew not only what they knew, but they also knew what they didn't know. Does that make sense? They were so smart. I know, it will make sense though. Stay with me. Hopefully. They were so smart that they knew that there were things they didn't know, that there was something out there that they just couldn't understand, that was bigger than even they could grasp. Now, we're talking about being smart, so I'm going to give us a little lesson here on some study that some scientists have done, okay? When you walk out of here, you will be smarter because you will know this. It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect. All right, the Dunning-Kruger effect. Here's some nice trivia you can impress your relatives with at the Christmas table. Here is a quote describing what the Dunning-Kruger effect is from the source that all smart people use, Wikipedia. All right? The Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias in which unskilled individuals suffer from illusory superiority, mistakenly rating their ability much higher than is accurate. This bias is attributed to a metacognitive inability of the unskilled to recognize their ineptitude. Actual competence may weaken self-confidence, as competent individuals may falsely assume that others have an equivalent understanding. Got it? Right. Okay. You guys are getting smarter just listening to these words, I can tell. But let me boil it down to you to some easy language, all right? Here's what the Dunning-Kruger effect means. If you know not very much, you think you know a lot. If you know a lot, you realize you don't know that much. Here's it even simpler. Stupid people think they're smart. Smart people know how stupid they really are. All right? That is the Dunning-Kruger effect. The Chinese philosopher Confucius said something similar. Real knowledge is to know the extent of one's ignorance. And this is what makes these wise men the smartest people around. This is what makes them remarkable. They are so smart that they know there is someone else smarter than them out there. There was someone else bigger. There was someone else greater. They're so smart that they want to worship something else. These wise men wanted to worship. Here's the question for us. Are we that smart? Are we smart enough to know the things that we don't know? Are we smart enough to realize that we can't figure it all out? Or are we too smart for our own good? Do we think we know everything when really we don't? Are we wise enough to worship? Are you wise enough to worship? This area of the world is especially known for people being smart. There's great companies here. There's great academic institutions here. This is a place of great intelligence. And yet it seems that for a lot of people, the smarter you get, you fall prey to this idea that you think you know everything. And for a lot of people, being smart means that they have a harder time believing in God. They think they've got it figured out, and they can't handle the idea of somebody that might be smarter than them. But here we have something different. Here we have the wise men, really smart people who are smart enough to know that something else is out there, that they can't figure it all out, and that they need to worship. Are we that smart? Are we wise enough to worship? So these wise men are looking for the one born king of the Jews. They want to come and worship him. So they do what is natural to do. They go to Jerusalem. If this person is born king, where else would he be but Jerusalem? But when they get there, there's a complication. As it turns out, the guy that's already king isn't all that excited to hear about a new king. And here's what happens. This is Matthew 2, verses 3 through 8. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. I'm sure he was. And all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. Herod is a big deal. He is the most powerful guy around. He's not the most powerful guy in the world. That would be Caesar. But Herod is king of the Jewish area. Now, he's not king like the kings of old were king. He's not king over an independent monarchy. He has to do what Caesar tells him to do. So he's only king as long as Caesar's happy with him. But at least in the region, he is the most powerful guy. He is the strongest guy around. But Herod is a bad guy. He is not nice. He is not fair. He is greedy. He is selfish. He oppresses the people that he is supposed to rule and take care of. He is powerful, but he is evil. Herod is the strongest guy around. So my intention was to represent Herod with a lion, because that seemed like a strong thing. But apparently we have a lot of smart people in this congregation, because they informed me after the first service that this is not a lion. And checking the tag, I was properly corrected. It is indeed a leopard, a sitting leopard, if you will. But nonetheless, this will go to represent Herod. So let's pretend it's a lion, but leopards are pretty strong too, I think. So Herod the leopard, lion, sort of, is going to stand there to remind us of the strength of Herod, that Herod is the strongest person around. Now, when Herod hears about this other king, he's not happy. He's troubled because he wants to stay strong. Jerusalem is troubled because Herod is very unpredictable, and if he gets upset, everybody's going to be upset. So everybody's in an uproar. They have to take care of this situation. For Herod, the news of a new king comes as a threat. It's a personal threat to his own power, to his way of life, to doing things the way he wants to do. And so he gets into action. He calls together the Jewish leaders and scribes and says, "Where is this king supposed to be born?" They recall a passage from Micah and say, "It's got to be Bethlehem." So then he calls in these wise men that have appeared and he says, "When is this supposed to happen?" And he finds out that it happened recently. So he sends them off. He's taking charge and he says, "Go, find this king, come back to me so I can worship him," of course. And yet his intentions probably are pretty clear. Herod is the strongest guy around, and the thing about strong people is that they want to stay strong. Powerful people want to keep their power. Strong people want to win. So the wise men come, and they want to worship. The strong man hears about this king, and he wants to win. Sometimes in my family, we like to see who is the strongest, right? We'll kind of show our biceps. I won't do it now because I don't want to make you guys feel bad or anything. But we'll compare biceps and, you know, do little feats of strength. And you'll be happy to know that I'm currently the reigning champion of strength in my family, which isn't saying that much since all my kids are under 12. But, you know, you take what you can get, right? So I'm enjoying it. Although it has occurred to me that there might be a time in the future when I will not be the strongest person in the family. And honestly, that is kind of frightening to me. Kids that are here, how many of your parents tickle you? Do we have some tickling parents? Yeah? How many of them like tease you, they poke you, they do things? How many of you have been plotting revenge for years? So I'd like to just make a little contract here that we will not take revenge on our parents once we get stronger than them. If we could agree to that, that'd be great. I think the day that I'm not the strongest in my family will be a very bad day indeed. The truth is, though, I don't think I'm the only one that likes being strong. I think most of us like being independent. We like doing what we want to do. We like having our way. We like being the ones that can get things done for ourselves. And so perhaps we too, like Herod, might see this appearance of a king as a threat, as someone that might change things in our lives. Most of us want to win, just like Herod wanted to win. And so if being smart can make it hard to believe in God, then being strong can make it hard to trust in Jesus. Because trusting in someone else is an acknowledgement that I can't do it all on my own, that I'm not as strong as I think I am, that I need someone else. Herod couldn't handle that. He couldn't arrive at that place. He needed to fight to win. What about us? Are we so intent on winning that we can't see God when he shows up? Are we too strong to surrender? Are you too strong to surrender? People assume that the Christmas story is good news. It's all about a baby and Christmas trees and presents and everybody's happy. But Herod wasn't happy. And I think sometimes if we're honest, the idea that God comes to earth, that God makes himself present, that God appears and intervenes, is sometimes an inconvenience. Sometimes, for me, I'd rather do things my way. I'd rather just get what I want. I'm not sure I want God interfering in my business or what I think is my business. I think that this is actually closer to the reason why a lot of people find faith hard. There are intellectual reasons that make believing tricky, but I think at the root of it is that we simply want to be in control. And believing in God, trusting in Jesus, means acknowledging that we aren't. And like Herod, we have a hard time with that. Sometimes we can be too strong to surrender. So we've seen the wise men arrive from a distant land with the purposes of worshiping this newborn king. We've seen the existing king step in and try and put a stop to all of this. Now we get to find out what happens. Here's Matthew 2, verses 9 through 11. After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. At first, it seems like this star that appeared maybe just led the wise men to the area, because they go to Jerusalem first looking for the king. But now, as they leave Jerusalem, the star seems to move ahead of them, and it guides them exactly to the place that this new baby Jesus is. When they get there, it is a great moment. The language is over the top. The Greek is really actually awkward. It says they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. It's like a triple repetition. It's like saying they're very, 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 very happy to get there. And they were, because they had traveled a long ways. We don't know exactly how far. It could have been months, maybe even a year or more, to get to this place to find this newborn king. And in that culture, when you worshiped something, you gave them gifts. The value of the gifts you gave was a demonstration of the value of the person you worshiped. And so they brought gold and frankincense and myrrh, echoing this prophecy from Isaiah 60, verse 6, that reads, "All those from Sheba shall come, they shall bring gold and frankincense, and shall bring good news, the praises of the Lord." So these wise men make a long journey, travel for a long time, and they get there and they worship. This is the climax of Matthew's story. It's a beautiful moment. It's a powerful moment. It's a holy moment. The wise men wanted to worship, and they got to. So we're going to take our little cute owl, and we're going to put him down in the posture of worship. He's going to be on his face before God worshiping. This is what worshiping looks like. Because when you worship someone, you acknowledge that they are greater than you, and you seek their favor. You put yourself under them. This is what the wise men do. We asked earlier whether we are wise enough to want to worship. The thing about God is that if you want to worship, he will let you. If you have a desire to put yourself before him, he will guide you to that place. That star brought those wise men exactly to the place of where Jesus was. And God does the same thing for us. If we have a desire to come before him and to worship our Creator, we can. He will let us. In fact, this very baby that was born is the reason we can. He came to enable us, to forgive us, to release us from our sins, to make a way so that we can come before God. If you want to worship God, tell him, and he will show you the way. He will put little things in front of you to lead you to him. Even the wise worship. Christmas is an opportunity to recognize that something bigger is here and to ask God to draw us into that, to pull us up into that grand story so that we might worship the King of Kings. In Christmas, God makes the first move. He comes into our world. He initiates so that we might respond. And when we do, he will lead us the rest of the way. But worship isn't the only option to responding to God. We've seen these wise men come, and up till now, there's been this tension in the story. Because Herod sent them. He sent them to go find this baby so that he might worship, although we all know that his intentions weren't so pure. And up to this point, we haven't known how that's going to play out. Is he actually going to find the location of this baby, and is he going to destroy this threat to his power? Well, we find out in the end of the story. Verse 12 of Matthew chapter 2. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Herod the king, the strongest man in town, is left out in the cold. He doesn't get his way. He loses. I hate to lose. You guys hate to lose? It's a terrible feeling, right? When your team loses, when you lose a game, when you play your 10-year-old in chess and they beat you, hypothetically, it's a terrible feeling to lose, right? Herod hates it more than any of us, I think. Herod hates, hates, hates to lose. And when he loses here, he goes crazy. He says, I'm going to do anything possible to defeat this baby. And he orders something horrific. He says in the next passage that all boys under 2 are to be murdered. And he sends his soldiers into the town he's supposed to be the ruler of, to commit mass murder. But then that passage said, and then Herod dies. See, Herod loses. And he tries to do everything he can possibly do to avoid losing. He tries to hold on to his power. He tries to stay the strongest person. And he ends up loses. He ends up losing. Because he finds out when you fight God, you lose. You're not the strongest guy around, even if you think you are. So we're going to take our jaguar or lion, and we're going to put him on his back, because that's how Herod ends up, lying on his back, losing the battle against God, losing his power, remembered only as an evil and greedy and desperate king. Herod thinks he's the strongest man around. He will do everything he can to keep that power, but he ends up in the end losing. People are obsessed with being smart and strong. We want to be in control. We want to have intelligence. We want to have power. We want to do things our way. But it turns out that this Christmas story, the story of a baby born in Bethlehem, of a king born for all people, gives us a choice to make. It turns out that we have two options presented before us in this story. The wise men came because they wanted to worship. The strong man acted because he wanted to win. The wise men got to worship. They experienced this glorious moment of being in God's presence, the fulfillment of their desire. The strong man ends up on his back, a loser. Question for us is, what choice will we make? We could be like the wise men. We could be smart enough to realize that we are not as smart as we think. We can ask God to lead us. We can follow whatever star God gives us, whatever direction he puts before us. And we can come to him in humility and worship this baby that has been born in gratitude and experience the glory of the king to rule forever. Or we can try to hold on to our strength. We can try to be independent. We can try to be powerful. We can do everything that we can think of to keep things going the way we want them to go. We can ignore this new king that comes on Christmas. We can fight this new king. Or we can do what a lot of people do and just convince ourselves that he's not real because we want to be in charge. But in the end, we will end up on our backs like Herod. That's the choice that Christmas gives us, lying on our faces in worship or lying on our backs in defeat? Are we wise enough to worship, or are we too strong to submit? Fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. How will you respond? Even the wise worship. Will you?